This is Daily Tips That May or May Not Help You with Arielle and Ned. Today it's just me, Arielle Nissenblatt, but you're hearing us on an off day. Usually we host this podcast Monday through Friday, but once a month we release a longer form episode with our guest tipper of the month. This month, January, we are so excited to welcome Emily Grimminger onto the podcast. Emily will be sharing tips with us throughout the month about her life and about how to start a business and about how to quit your job and so much more. So I'm really excited today to bring Emily onto the show so we can get more into those tips and also get some context about her life and what caused her to start a company that creates flushable butt wipes. So Emily, welcome to the show, and please tell us who you are, and then we'll get a little bit more into the details of your life.
Amazing. I'm Emily. I am one of Ariel's very old childhood friends. Oh, a dog. Yeah. We'll get into that. So I started a chic flushable wipe company that launched at the end of August. And I started it because I think that just using dry toilet paper is not doing the job. And all the other wipes on the market were baby looking or plastic packaging and crinkly, and I was always hiding them. So I thought, like, I can probably do something different with this.
Wow. Amazing. I haven't never actually heard the story of how it came to be. I mean, I feel like you and I have known each other for a long time. You mentioned that, and we'll get into that. And then also why I thought you'd be a perfect guest is because I feel like we don't often talk to people who are creating physical products. So I think that puts you in a unique position. But I have only seen your story on Instagram, so it's really cool to be talking about this for the first time face-to-face, even though it's a remote conversation. You're in Los Angeles. You recently moved to Los Angeles. Tell us what prompted that move and how it has shaped your business.
Yeah, so I moved about 3 years ago now, and I was in New York for, I don't know, 6-7 years, which is also where I grew up. And I personally just felt like the city shifted a lot during and after COVID, which is where I also spent all of COVID. So I was just feeling a little bit trapped. And I wanted a change. I actually had come out to LA during COVID because there was possibly an internal job opportunity out here for me. And I was kind of just appeasing them. And I was like, sure, like, I want to get out of the house anyway. I'll come out here. I never thought I would leave New York in my life. I came out here. I loved it. And then after 2 years of going back and forth, debating, moving, I pulled the plug and came out here.
Amazing. As some listeners might know, I also lived in Los Angeles. So I'm sad that we flipped and now I'm in New York and you're in Los Angeles. But I feel like I've sort of mentioned this. We've known each other since we were like 10. Is that right?
I was thinking about it earlier. It's been like over 20 years.
That's disgusting.
Disgusting.
But it's also kind of beautiful and cool. And you mentioned this in one of the tips that you're going to share this month, that you grew up as somebody, you didn't consider yourself academically gifted. And the reason I can say that is because I, too, did not consider myself academically gifted, and it hurt a lot. And so it's super cool to see you thriving in your life in Los Angeles and in your business. And you mentioned that as part of coming out to Los Angeles, you were going back and forth a bit. For a long time, you had a career not in chic flushable butt wipes. What was your career? And tell us about what eventually prompted this big shift.
Yeah. So I was at the same company since I graduated college. So for about 9 years.
Wow.
And yeah, wow is right.
Unheard of in millennial terms.
I like to say I'm a bad millennial. For a while, I actually thought it was like a positive thing to stay at the same place for that long. Now looking back, I like not sure if that's true. But anyway, so I did a variety of different types of jobs. And probably about 2-ish years ago, when I decided I wanted to actually implement this idea about butt wipes that I've had for quite some time, I tried to figure out how I could do that while keeping my job, because I knew it was going to be an expensive venture. But honestly, I think the only reason I was able to take this jump was because moving out to LA, not really knowing anyone, was so incredibly uncomfortable and also not the path I thought I was going to take. Thought I was going to be in New York forever. And doing that and knowing I could do it made me feel like, okay, I can do something else that's challenging and difficult. And totally off the beaten path, like start a chic butt wipe company.
Totally off the beaten path, and also not a sentence that you hear very often.
No.
So how did you come to understand that potential product market fit? I'm sure, you know, those are terms that you've probably come across a lot. It's terms that I've understood just from like listening to podcasts about how people make things, like how I built this. So I'm just curious, like, first of all, where the idea came from. Second, how you decided to start packaging the wording as well as the physical packaging that makes up the product. And yeah, everything in that came along with that.
Yeah. So it was quite the process. The idea itself I had come up with basically out of a personal need. I didn't want to keep using a product that looked like it was made for babies or kids, or honestly just has a stigma that it's embarrassing because you use it in the bathroom and you're always hiding it. And look, like a lot of people do hide or put away, I should say, a lot of things in their bathroom because they want it to look a certain way. But what I was thinking about is how over the last 5+ years, the skincare market has really exploded. And a lot of the packaging of skincare is actually meant to be left out on your counter. There was like for a while, people had those like clear acrylic shelves in their bathroom to like display all of their skincare or makeup. And I just had this thought, like, what if I can develop a reusable dispenser that looks as chic as a skincare product? Because technically it is skincare.
Yeah.
And so as I was developing it, that was kind of the inspo. How I knew there was a market, I mean, there are major, major companies doing hundreds of millions of dollars a year in revenue just off flushable wipes. So I knew the market was there. People were using the product. They just hadn't seen it in this way before, which has required a lot of education. But I didn't feel like I had to do a ton of market research because it was done already, right? Like those companies kind of paved the way for me to do this in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. You're packaging it in a different way. You're maybe marketing towards different people.
Yeah. For the most part, I would say my main audience are millennial women. But honestly, men too have been purchasing it. But what surprised me the most is actually a lot of what I thought was going to be my target market for the most part has been a lot larger than I anticipated. Like they're are a lot of people in their 60s or 70s buying this product, not something that I anticipated. So that's been a nice surprise. I won't say no to anyone buying my product. So,
yeah, of course not. Let's get into some practical tips about starting a business. What were some of the things that you had to do to make it an official business?
Wow. Okay. So the first thing I did was the second I came up with the name, I filed for an LLC.
Wow.
And that was...
What is the name? Tell us the name.
The name is Semmi, S-E-M-M-I, and it comes from a childhood nickname, which my parents have called me my entire life that I used to be embarrassed by, which is Sweet Emmy.
Aww.
And it's funny because I feel like you and your mom also used to call me like a variety of nicknames. So that's how I came up with it. I didn't want to silo the brand into just wipes, which is why I didn't call it like girl butt wipes or something. So I wanted it to be a brand that felt chic and discreet and not necessarily screaming like this is something you wipe your butt with, which is why I went the more personal naming.
I love that. Thanks. So you filed for the LLC. Any surprises in that process or things that people might want to know about?
Yeah. So I'd say in general, like the first things I focused on were my intellectual property and making sure that I had the right legalities of like actually having a business set up before starting a lot of the work that's like the sexy, fun, cool work.
Mm-hmm.
I personally used LegalZoom to help with that. There are many, many online companies now that can help you file for an LLC. You actually can do it yourself too. I just was working full time, so chose to outsource certain things that I thought would take a long, long time for me. And then you have to do it like if you live in a certain state, there's different rules by different states. So I had to do that in California and I had to get a business address and all these different things. You have to file for what's called an EIN number, which is essentially a social security number for a business.
Wow.
Didn't know about that. Like it's just all these things that are really the backbone of being able to stand up the business legally.
Wow. What else went into the beginning stages? I imagine you had to buy a domain. I imagine you had to come up with a logo. How did you do those things?
Yeah, so I did buy a domain. I also ended up speaking to a few different people. I did a ton of research on wipes themselves, but then on product development companies, because I knew I didn't have the background to make a high-end product or a design background. So I spoke to a bunch of other founders, did research, interviewed a ton of product development companies, ended up going with a small product development company that's based in Connecticut. And they have engineers in place that can really go deep in the design. So I pitched them my idea. I told them what I wanted to do. I showed them different shapes and literally it was examples of things that I saw in Target, like a ceramic dish that I thought looked cool. Or when I was deciding on the colors, I found other products in my life that had the colors that I wanted, boxed it up, sent it to them. And like literally a fork that I like in my house that's the right shade of gold. I donated it to my my business. So all these little things that seem like you could just like click a button and press go are not it. I also, at that point, again, like a lot of the decisions I made were based on the fact that I knew I didn't have the time to do it myself. Mm-hmm. So I had hired a woman, a freelancer, to help me with some of the branding, early branding design work and packaging work, because the packaging work itself is like a whole other thing I didn't even know that have to be in certain like guidelines and dye lines, and I didn't know what a dye line was. I mean, I literally didn't know what any of this was.
That's amazing.
So I hired people in the beginning to help me with the things that I truly knew I couldn't do myself because I was working.
Yeah, because you were working a full-time job while figuring all of this out.
Yeah.
What became more on you when you did quit your job? What did you now have the time to do? And what did you pick up as part of the work?
Yeah, so I do want to share something actually, because this is a really interesting question you're asking. After I quit my job, it took me over a month to figure out how to set up my life in a way that I could like figure out how to run my own business. It's very difficult to go from a job where you have a calendar, a schedule, mm-hmm. you know what to do, how to do it.
Structure.
And all of a sudden, I had to figure all that out by myself.
You have to like, you have to fill your day.
I have to fill my day and there's plenty to do.
Right.
It was more, the most challenging part was the tools I had in my corporate job, like time blocking, did not work yet for me at the beginning stages of running semi full time, because 90% of the tasks I was doing, I had no idea how long they were actually going to take me to do. So I would block 2 hours to do my website on Shopify. It would take me 6 hours to do one thing. My first TikTok I ever created, it took me 10 hours to edit. It doesn't, thank God, take me that long anymore. It did. And I was like, how am I going to ever do this? So I share that because it's not this like easy transition where all of a sudden I can just go and get everything done. There are things like coding that take a really long time. Yes, AI is helpful to an extent. Sometimes it's not as helpful as you think it is.
Yeah. Wow. There is so much that goes into this. And I want to go deeper on the business side of things. A lot of the tips that you share throughout this month are learnings from your experience starting a business, but they're also broader. They also get into trusting yourself and making sure that you know when to ask for help and things like that. Social media is a huge part of running a business nowadays for a lot of different people. I've noticed, I mentioned a few moments ago, that a lot of what I know about your business is by following you on social media. And I feel like you do an amazing job, first of all, using the trends to promote your business. How did you learn that? How did you get plugged into the world of social media? And how does it fit into your process for putting content out and potentially reaching new customers?
Yeah, so that's a good question. One thing I did not take into consideration before doing this was that right now, people want to see everything. that you're doing behind the scenes. At no point in my life did I ever stop and think to myself, I want to be in front of the camera. I love to public speak. I do not. So I had to just get on board with that really quickly. I brought on a consultant for 3 months. She is the co-founder of a very, very successful travel iron company, and I trust her a lot. I had met her a couple years ago when I first shared the idea of Semi, and she really helped me set up a lot of the basic components that I need to be focusing on, one of which was social media. And I was very much trying to go against the grain of, I don't want to do the trends. And she said, honestly, every time you see a trend, just take out your phone and record it.
Damn.
And I started to do that. The only reason I say I wanted to go against the grain was because I don't always like doing the trends.
Yeah.
But actually finding a way to incorporate some of these silly trends into a flushable butt wipe company is a very creative muscle to flex. So it actually has helped me quite a bit.
Wow. I love that. And what have you seen as a result of being active on social media?
I have a very small, relatively speaking, social media following, but it's grown quite a bit. The more I post, the more that grows. And in turn, I'm able to just reach a broader audience of people who aren't finding me from word of mouth. So at first, a lot of it was word of mouth. It was friends and family. This has really helped me expand to a whole other network of people that would have been completely untapped otherwise.
And has it translated to sales? Social media, has that translated to sales?
That's an interesting question. Yes. So it has. I would say a lot of my ads that I'm pushing have been very good for sales too.
Amazing.
Some of them are social media posts that I turn into ads, which is why I like answered that like with a little hesitation.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It definitely helps. And it also, if anything, just has been really good for me to see like what people engage, like what people are interested in knowing. That's the one really nice thing about social media is there's a lot of analytics behind the platform that allow you to actually see what's working and what's not.
When it comes to turning some of your social posts into ads, do you have any tips around how to select the audience that you're sending that out to? And once you do get the initial data back from that, do you double down on some of that spend?
Yeah, I have to be very careful with the spend. So one thing that people should know if they're going to use Meta ads, which is like the main platform, they are very expensive to run. And I learned that quickly. I did not know that at first. So a lot of it is, if I probably could have done one thing differently, I maybe wouldn't have gone so quick to run ads using a ad agency to help me just because it is so expensive. However, I have used that as like research because it gave me so many analytics. I noticed that every ad campaign I run, the videos that do the best, that convert to the most sales are where I am talking about the business, which I hate because I don't want to be the face every single time I have to create an ad, but it is just me. So yeah. I do need to talk about it.
And that's what people want, to be honest. Like if you had a random actor, people would not associate that with you. Your name is the brand, Sweet Emmy. So who is Sweet Emmy?
Yeah,
I people want to see that. And I also think it's a lot of the advice that you get as like a female founder in a city that you probably are also part of other like groups that do give a lot of advice around that. There's probably a lot of you do need to be doing behind the scenes content in order to show what this process is, because that is something that might attract a potential investor. Right. They want to know the story behind it.
Yeah. And I'll say what I'm hearing now as of late is like they're referring to it as building in public. And I will say something about that that has been helpful that I did not anticipate outside of sales and customers is it's actually given me an outlet to connect with other female founders, both in LA and across the country. And I actually made a really good friend on TikTok because we just DM'd each other and she happens to live down the street. So that's been a true blessing in disguise.
What's her product or service?
She is about to launch a fragrance brand in February that's based around like developing memories around scent, which I think is really unique. We're in really different spaces, a lot of what we go through on a day-to-day is similar, and we've been able to just vent a bunch and also help each other in areas where maybe we are not so great at.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing. So we're recording this right around the holidays. The holidays have just passed. I imagine that's a big time for you in terms of sales or hopeful potential sales. How did it go? What advice do you have for yourself for next year when this time comes around again?
I think hopeful was the key word there. So again, I've only been around for like 4-ish months, 5 months. And I was seeing really good traction on my sales in September, October, and early November. Then I'm sure a lot of people noticed this year that it felt like Black Friday started in July. That was very difficult as a small business because I can't go on sale too early. I can't go on sale too aggressively, but I do have to go on sale at some point. Interestingly enough, what I noticed was I started my sale November 18th. The second I started my sale, my number of orders actually dropped dramatically. I ended my sale December 8th, went back to full price, and what I saw was an increase in my number of orders. Why? Okay, so let's talk about that though, because that's like not normal. It's because during that peak time when people are bigger brands, and I don't just mean like the Nikes of the world. I mean, even brands that are considered small, but they do like $10 million in revenue a year. They have the ability to be pushing ad spend in a way that a very new small business, like of my size, cannot break through the noise. Yeah. So unless I was willing to spend a huge amount of money a day, I was not, to acquire customers, it wasn't going to work. Another learning was that a lot of people look at products all year and wait for it to go on sale. My business had only been around for a few months, so no one was waiting all year for it to go on sale. And then the last thing is like maybe Semi is not a giftable product. And that's honestly fine because that means you can buy it all year around versus like an expensive sweater. That's a giftable product. Pajama is a giftable product. A computer is a giftable product. Maybe butt wipes is not like the most giftable product. And that was also a big learning for me. So now things are rocking and rolling again. But it definitely did not have the Black Friday I thought I was going to have. And I was actually really disappointed by it.
Okay. But good to know for next year that maybe that's a time when you decide to actively buck the trend and say like, well, I'm not doing a sale. I'm actually raising prices around Black Friday.
Yeah, I mean, that would be different.
That would be kind of kooky. Emily, there's a dog that keeps popping into your screen, which I love. I'm not asking you to say sorry. Instead, I'm asking you to share your relationship with dog walking and how this fits into your overall money-making efforts.
Yeah, so I actually refer to any dog that I've walked or watch as my investors because they are. And that started probably right around when I started working on this and realizing how expensive it was going to be. So I'm in the West Coast, as you mentioned, but the majority of my company, or honestly any financial services, is going to run on East Coast hours. So I was working like 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. ish. Then I was walking dogs a few times a week, which then turned into babysitting dogs when people go away. Of the money I've spent on Semi, so far about 15% of that has come from dog walking and dog sitting. And now that it is really my only source of income, I say yes as much as I can. But I actually don't have a dog. I just am.
These are friends of the Semi.
Frequent investor meetings, if you will.
That's great. And on the road, too. And picking up dog poop.
Yeah. I think I am one.
Semi for dog butts? Question mark.
Oh, you know, I think eventually I'll go that direction at some point because I have no choice. But
people spend on their pets.
I know.
Yes.
So I will go that direction eventually, but I'm just trying to do like, you know, one thing at a time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if the dogs ask for it and they use their words, I'll do it.
Yeah, you're definitely a feedback oriented founder. Emily, we talked a lot about the work that you do, but we haven't talked about how you detach from work. So do you detach from work? If so, what do you do to relax?
Yeah. like, I don't know that I've been relaxed for a while at this point. That's also been really difficult. I feel a lot of responsibility in the success of this, obviously. So I'm having a hard time disconnecting. I have really tried to make sure that I don't work on Saturdays.
Good for you.
Or Sunday mornings. But I do often set myself up for the week, Sunday afternoon, evening at some point. But there have been times where I will not have a social plan for like 10 days and I'm going crazy. Building a business by yourself, especially, is actually a very lonely endeavor. Mm-hmm. I was not prepared for that. And so I've noticed when I have no social plans, it's actually bad for the business. Bad for me, it's bad for the business. So I try to make sure to get outside every day in some capacity. I will go to workout classes a few times a week. And I do try to close my computer at a decent hour, but...
I love that even as an aspirational tip.
It's very difficult. It really is. But if you don't disconnect at some point, I just think it becomes detrimental to you personally and also to the business, because I lose my creative spark, if you will.
Yeah.
My friendships are really important to me. So I want to make sure that they're not being negatively impacted because I made a decision to start a business.
Yeah. Tips on making friends in a new city, a new to you city. This is your third year in Los Angeles. How did you make friends? And now you mentioned you have some friends through the business.
Yeah.
And I imagine you're making more.
Yeah. My first year out here, I pretty much said yes to anything that somebody invited me to. And it wasn't always like a big success by any means, but I would meet a person here or there. Also, you know, someone would say that their cousin's best friend's, like, fiance, I don't know, lives out here and would love to get coffee. And I would always do that. So just constantly putting myself out there. I'm glad I didn't try to start a business and do that at the same time. I think I would have burnt out really fast. Mm-hmm. Because it's exhausting. It's not easy. But eventually I ended up finding people that I love being around and are great friends.
Wow.
But it took a while. It wasn't an easy transition, but I kind of knew what I was walking into, mm-hmm. not knowing practically anyone. So luckily there's a lot of big cities these days, a lot of like community events, a lot of things you can go to during the day of different activities or so it's actually been really nice.
I maintain that LA is one of the most creative cities because people are stuck in traffic all the time and have a lot of time to think.
Oh,
does that resonate with you as a new founder?
Oh, interesting.
Some of my best ideas came from listening to podcasts in the car, but also just from being in the car, you know, hour after hour after hour, commuting.
Wait, but
and
don't
trying
I have
to figure out
I think
how
I have to say
myself.
That my best ideas come in the from like when I'm in the bathroom.
That's really fitting.
When I was commuting, I was only like 15 minutes away and I was always reverse traffic. So I wasn't.
Nice.
But now that I am going to a lot of like founder events or other events that are in West Hollywood, which is during rush hour, could be an hour from where I live, which is really only like 9 or 10 miles.
Mm.
I have had a lot of ideas. I feel like I often am recording voice notes to myself when I'm driving. So that's actually
a great tip.
Yeah. So that's cool. You have to write things down or like record them or you're just going to forget at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got so many amazing tips from this conversation and also from the four tips that you will share with our Tippendales throughout this month. Emily Grimminger, tell us the mission of Semi, just because I really want to hit that home, because I think it's the coolest thing that you did this by yourself and, of course, with help from friends along the way. But you're going to keep doing this and it's going to take off because people need chic, flushable butt wipes in their lives. Tell us about Semi one more time and then tell us where we can find you.
Absolutely. People do need Semi in their lives because dry toilet paper is not getting it all when you wipe. Sorry, it's true. It's gross. It's true.
Hard truth.
And wipes just pick up way more. Actually, I did read recently that, or not recently when I was doing my research, but wipes actually pick up 80% more bacteria than just dry toilet paper alone. So you can sit with that. I just think our butts deserve a lot better than just dry toilet paper. So everyone has a butt, is what I like to say. And everyone needs wipes. And you can find me at getsemi.com or on social media is get.semi, which is S-E-M-M-I.
And your personal founder journey is being documented on your personal Instagram?
Actually, funny enough, it's on my Get Semi Instagram.
Really? Oh, and you're doing a lot of cross posts.
I'm doing cross. A lot of people keep them separate. That was not a strategy I was aware of when I started doing this. So we're just doing it all together.
I love it all together, and it's working for you, and it will hopefully continue to work for you. Tippendales, definitely check out Emily's work, and these tips are amazing. So I was really excited to interview you about this and to catch up because Tippendales, Emily, and I have known each other for 20 years, as we figured out on this episode today. So Emily, again, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being our guest tipper of the month. This is 2026, and we're so excited to have started it off with you.
Thanks for having me.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.